I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
Can I be an authority and a minority in practice and theory? In theory, I am both. However, in practice, I am often foremost a minority. That's a quote from Rochelle Smith in a piece called Walking on Eggshells, The Experience of a Black Woman Professor. And so often on this podcast, we've chosen to have conversations about how to disrupt hierarchies of power and create more equitable environments. And this has included things like decentering the construct of the expert or the authority and normalizing not knowing and, you know, being aware of our power whenever we have it and working to diffuse that power. But this becomes much more complicated when we have to take into account how little power we have to begin with as women of color. So our BIPOC of the week are Juanita Johnson Bailey and Ming Ye Lee, who wrote an article called Women of Color in the Academy, Where is Our Authority in the Classroom? And while this piece specifically focuses on the experience of women of color in academia, any of us who have occupied a managerial role or a facilitator role or really any other position of power or authority while holding anti-oppressive values, I think will relate. And so I want to start with an excerpt from that article to kind of set the scene. I sort of wanted to be like, can this podcast episode just be me reading this entire article into a microphone? Because the whole thing was just so perfect and really resonated and kind of made my blood boil as I was reading it, but also really appreciated these women for writing it. So I would encourage anybody who resonates with this topic or, you know, anyone who's not a woman of color also to read the article. It's available online, the full PDF. So they said, our conscience and our training remind us that we should not be concerned with acquiring and maintaining power. Yet our experience tells us that we do not have the luxury given to our white counterparts who can rely on students to respect them and not to push too far beyond the boundaries of this new world where the teacher is ceding power to the students. Indeed, white women teachers have power to cede. They have some privilege and authority given to them by the larger society. They cannot divest themselves of this authority, no matter how neutral and non-authoritarian they make their classrooms. Women of color, however, although artificially vested in the robes of power with the accompanying markers, degrees, publications, and academic rank, are often seen as academic imposters. Additionally, women of color academics, though part of a power system, have little power to control and affect the larger academic environment. In fact, the students, who often look more like those traditionally in power than do women professors of color, have more power. Our all too familiar experiences of being questioned, such as facing student appeals and complaints without enjoying the direct support of university administration, tell us this is so.
Ooh.
Yeah. So today I want to talk about the ways that our authority is challenged as women of color, even when we're in positions of supposed power, what it would mean to claim our authority and power, and explore how we can work to do that while still practicing anti-oppressive values. So I want to check in with you about your relationship to this topic, your relationship to the idea of authority and your own authority. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, those excerpts are I don't think that I have held a position of real like authority in a formal sense, but I've definitely, you know, been in the academy as a student and watched the treatment of racialized professors. I took a gender studies like undergrad, and the few women of color who were in the academy, for example, were often not tenured, often sessionals or instructors. Often there were terse relationships between the institution, the department even, and them, and their work was always sort of under more scrutiny. The work that they were doing with students was always kind of subject to more kind of surveillance. There were actively people in classrooms. I remember in one class I've taken where a Black professor teaching a really important class to a lot of Black women students had to remove a white male student from the class who continued to like disrespect her, disrespect the space, question her authority, question all of our experiences. And the class is on Black and African women in the Americas. So yeah, I think I've seen it play out a lot. And I recognize in my own body, as you were reading those excerpts, I'm just recalling moments in my life where I felt like my voice was, albeit loud, clearly not heard by people who, I guess, were in disbelief that I could have the opinions that I had or the knowledge that I had. And I would say I feel really uncomfortable with the idea of being like a person that has authority, but I also recognize that by virtue of being on this podcast and having a platform and also being a quote unquote like equity, diversity, and inclusion consultant, people look towards me in that kind of way as a person who is like bringing truth or has expertise. So yeah, I'm just like really curious more to hear about your experiences more generally, and also just like talk about some of these themes around disrespect. Really is what I'm like picking up on, is like a deep amount of disrespect when it comes to the knowledge, expertise, talents that we possess, whereas a complete sort of assumed authority if you are kind of walking around in a different body. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. So first I want to say kind of what I think authority is.
Yeah.
So to me, a sense of your own authority would be being grounded in what you have to offer, like what you know, what your truth is, what your experience is, as well as a sense of power as in responsibility, like the way a facilitator is responsible for the space, right, or like a teacher, they're responsible for the space as well. And also they're teaching a particular thing to their students, they're evaluating students. So there's a lot of like responsibility that comes with power, I guess, usually power over in a way, at least for that, you know, particular space. Yeah. What's your understanding of what authority?
Yeah, all is? Of those things come to mind. And then I was thinking, as you were talking about, I was thinking about purpose, like having, being sure in your role or your purpose or like what you're there for and knowing kind of who you are. I remember when you did my astrology reading for the first time, our first hangout session, and you had told me something about myself that I was so confused about and had to do with my authority, something to the effect of like, you told me that I had this authority and this way of communicating that wasn't domineering, but that was like, I don't know, like humanizing. Like it was like people were drawn to that. I think it was in relation to like my Scorpio rising. I remember you said that about like the authority that I had. And I was like, I have no idea what that really means. I felt so insecure at that point in time. But looking back at it, you know, look back at it. And now I'm like, yeah, I know I have such a clear picture of my purpose and I can stand in that truth of like who I actually am. And I know what I'm not. So I'm not really trying to like flex on anyone. I'm just sort of like, yeah, this is me. And like, this is what you're going to get with me. And I think that that's a way that you can have authority in like yourself and in your sense of like who you are without it being power over. It's just like you exude a confidence in who you are and your role and your purpose in, it could be in like work, but it could also just be like in life.
I really like that. And I agree. I don't think it always has to be power over, I think, that groundedness in, again, like your sense of yourself, your sense of your confidence, your sense of what you have to offer. That feels like a huge part of it. But you said a second ago that you don't really feel comfortable with the idea of yourself as an authority. And I'm curious what you meant by that.
When it comes to maybe working, when it comes to, and it's so funny because I think that oftentimes in that excerpt that you read, it was talking about how like white professors versus women of color professors. And one thing that I was struck by was like the title, like people kind of assume that like when you have a title, it means that you have authority. And that's not true, right? Like clearly power is always in the room, and like the lives that we live, the ways that we are like racialized and gendered and all these other facets of our identity that are seen through prisms of like systems of oppression, you know, like those follow us in our professional lives. And so it's not, I think, the case that just by virtue of having like the title of professor, like, of course, yes, you're evaluating some students or, you know, in the case of teaching or the case of like providing expertise or whatever, but that doesn't inherently mean that people see you as an authority. The title might give folks that sort of like, oh, you know, professor so-and-so, but like, you know, for a fact that when people pull up into that class that I was taking and it was taught by a Black woman, they were like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I know what it's going to be like this, especially that disruptive white dude. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, so the title in and of itself isn't like what the authority is. It's like people's perceptions, people's agendas, people's, you know, people are going to come to you with their whole set of baggage about who they think you are. And it's not, sometimes it doesn't matter who you actually are. They have their, you know, perceptions and they're going to place that shit on you.
Absolutely. I mean, they talked in the article. So Juanita Johnson Bailey is Black. And she said that one day she was walking through a hallway to get to her classroom and a student came out and said, oh, we need help in here, and like pulled her into a classroom. And when she got in there, there had been like a spill, and this white woman student who had seen her had assumed that she was a housekeeper, even though she had like a briefcase. And like, if she'd actually really looked at her, it would have been clear that she was not janitorial staff.
Right.
And she said like she was so stunned that she like couldn't even speak and just sort of like walked out of the room because she was just like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Right.
But it speaks volumes, right? That like, it doesn't matter, you know, that you're wearing like a blazer and you have a briefcase. Somebody just looks at you and assumes who you are.
Yeah. And I think in cases like that, sometimes I wonder if people are just trying to like humble you. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that student was like, oh, I just grabbed the first racialized person I saw. But then there's also people who, and like, that's horrific. Like, that's horrific. And another thing that's horrific is when people are like, I'm going to go out of my way to make sure that this person knows that I disrespect them. Like, I watched on Instagram a clip of this Black woman who is somewhere in the States, of course, but also everywhere. And she was like, I think she was trying to pass some exam or whatever. And some commissioner, he's in government, refused to call her doctor. Kept calling him Miss. She's like, actually, my name is Dr. So-and-so. And he kept on repeating her name, calling her Miss. And then at some point he called her by her first name and made like a pet name out of her first name. Like, hey, Law, like, instead of calling you like, you know, Dr. Lala yeah. Mathen, if that was who you are. It was just like, and she kept on insisting, like, you need to call me by my name. This is the name that I'm telling you to call me. And he was like, well, your name on Zoom says this, so I'm just reading that. Like, and it was like this man's insistence on humbling her and disrespecting her.
Ugh, what a horrible world we live in.
Yes.
At times, yes. So I'm curious, when you were in grad school, did you ever work as a TA?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not, because I was like, no, you know what? But you did, right?
I did, unfortunately. Yeah. So no.
That's why I said I did it. Unfortunately, no.
Yeah, there were positives and negatives. So in preparing this episode, I've been thinking a lot about these experiences that I had because, well, I'll just get into it. So I started off, like, everybody pretty much in the master's program was TAing like a 100 level intro to political science course. And It was definitely challenging, and it was very intimidating. I didn't really have, you know, they didn't give you really much training, and you're sort of thrown into it. And grad school already was like a very intimidating experience that was like, you know, so much harder than undergrad, which was already, you know, quite overwhelming at times. So yeah, it wasn't easy. And I mean, I very much remember the way that in particular men treated me. And these would have been like young, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old men. And I have such a strong memory of the students were doing group work, and I was sort of going around to each group and kind of looking in on what they were doing. And I remember like walking up to a group of these students, of these men, and the vibe I was getting back from them was, you know, indistinguishable from if I was walking up to a table of men at a bar. Like, it was right. Just, there was no respect, no authority. It was like they're leering at me and just sort of like, yeah. Again, not taking it seriously and acting like we're here to socialize somehow.
Right.
So that was a lot. And then I remember we had this experience where we were talking about Islamophobia, and there were like white students arguing that Islamophobia isn't racism because, you know, it's a religion, it's not a race, and all of this. And, you know, I was bringing in obviously a more accurate perspective, and we were having this whole conversation, and, you know, the white students were not in any way learning anything or listening or backing down. At a certain point, I called it. And I could see, you know, and part of my decision to call it was that I could see a student who was Muslim looking like he was going to cry, honestly. And so anyways, the class ended and people were leaving, and I kind of like asked him to hang back and just kind of chatted with him about like what had happened, kind of debriefing, and also just sort of opened the conversation to sort of be like, it's really fucking hard being, you know, brown in academia and in London, Ontario. And, you know, we had a good conversation, and this student, it was, you know, very kind of him. He emailed the professors of the class, as well as I think the head of the department, to say that I was amazing and that like, you know, I was the reason that, you know, he wasn't like dropping out of school and like all these kinds of things. Wow. So that was really kind of him. And so anyways, for second semester, I ended up getting moved into, because like there was a thing that happened where TAs got shuffled around. A PhD student who was TAing a 200 level course couldn't do it anymore. And so I got moved up into that section. And I think there was one other master's level student TAing, and the other ones were PhD students. So even more intimidating. And I remember when it came to the students' papers, there was this one white male student who had always been very challenging. And he, I think I gave him like a C or a C plus on his paper because it wasn't very good. And he decided to challenge it. And he really went hard that like I was incompetent and didn't know what I was doing. And wow. It was so like the feeling of it too, like I already had so much like imposter syndrome that it was this feeling of like, oh my god, everybody's gonna like agree with him, and you know, everyone's gonna find out that I have no idea what I'm doing, all these things, right? I was lucky because, especially, you know, reading this article, you know, so often when like white students complain about women of color, the faculty and the administration support the white students.
Yes.
Like whoever is white in the scenario is the one who gets supported, right? Doesn't matter. Yes. Yeah. Who they are. And I was lucky that my, you know, the professor who was teaching it, she was my supervisor, and like other TAs kind of close ranks around me. And it went to a second TA to like grade again, because that's like the process if someone challenges their mark. So I went to another TA in the section. And actually it was a white woman PhD student who, you know, when we talked in our internalized misogyny episode about how I would sometimes get a vibe from certain women where I'm like, you're judging me because of the way I present my femininity.
Yes.
I always got this vibe from her.
Okay.
Always.
Like, and oh, like, great. Even this person's gonna be
exactly. Yeah. Like, even throughout this, she was like not really making eye contact with me. So I was like, oh my God, this is a nightmare, my actual nightmare. But the second TA upheld the grade, and I guess the student had said that I didn't give any feedback or enough feedback to justify my grade because I had no idea about the subject matter and I didn't know anything and I was incompetent. And I remember seeing she wrote like several pages of comments to uphold like the C, and was like, oh, I heard that the student felt that he didn't get enough feedback, so I wanted Here's to make sure feedback. I gave him a lot, wow. Which was really lovely. But what I've been reflecting on this week is how I've still all this time carried so much shame, you know, that it was my fault and he was really right about me and I had no business being there and all of those things.
Right. Wow. I mean, that story reminds me of me. I witnessed that take place in my master's with a cishet white man doing that to a woman professor who had, and I'm telling you, years. Like, I'm saying she was a public servant for 25, 30 years. Deputy minister. She was talking about policy writing. She, like, really knew what she was talking about. This was shit she did in her sleep. She was like, okay, little boy, let me show you. And it was one of those, it's like, it's such a deep disrespect to somebody's intelligence. Have you ever heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect? It's a cognitive bias like theory that people, so it's like at the beginning of starting a new, you know, hobby, let's say, people usually like start off learning a bit and they get to this point where like they think they know everything. They think they know so much shit because they've just like opened their eyes to discover this new thing. But over time, their competence or their confidence in how much they know drops because they realize they don't know that much.
Right.
And so it's kind of like this sort of low ability overestimation of like what you actually know or can do or whatever. And then over time you're like, oh, I'm humbling myself. I'm realizing that in actuality, there's so much more for me to learn. And I find that in the situation that you've described and one that I've witnessed myself, it's like people coming with the energy of like, if I don't get my way, there's nothing that you have to offer me, as opposed to being coachable, like being teachable, like being malleable, being open. That was something that I learned when I was playing sports in high school all the time, is like, be coachable. Don't always be so hard-headed and be resistant to like the fact that you actually don't know that much, and that there are people that can give you more tools, and you always have something to learn, either about yourself or about somebody else. Like, that's the thing. It's not always about like, you know, I'm not getting my needs met in the specific way in terms of, you know, taking, especially when it comes to like teaching environments. I feel like students have these like really, and I, you know, I've been that person who's like, ugh, you know, not too sure if this person really knows what they're talking about, only have to realize that like this person really does know what the fuck they're talking about. And how dare I kind of come into that space assuming that I know so much more, you know? And so, yeah, it's the lack of awareness and humility, I think, that can come out in ways that stick with you. Like for you, you just said you held on to this shame that like you were the problem, when it's like, no, this guy had trash analysis and trash writing. And instead of being like, oh, you know, I got to see, can I make up for it? Can I, like, how can I prove that I'm better? Can you show me like how I fucked it up? Like, as opposed to taking that humble route, it's like there's something wrong with you, as opposed to something wrong with his writing.
Yeah, well, and in the article, they talked about the ways that students will use power in order to protect themselves. So they said, students use subtle means to keep their vested power and attempt to enforce and replicate the status quo in the classroom. We are not categorizing this as negative, but instead consider it a natural behavior in a hierarchical society.
What do you think that means?
I guess that, like, you know, it's a hierarchical society. People are at a very core level aware that they need power to, like, be okay in the world. And so when they sense it being taken from them, they will
lash out, do whatever
they can to get it back.
Right.
And so in a situation like this, you know, it's a woman of color, you're a white man, you kind of know, like, in most scenarios, you can take her. Like, whatever the power system is, it's like, no, I can
do what you want. Kind of, you know, the odds are stacked in your favor. So it's like, why should this be any different, really?
And I think what's really difficult, and I talk about this a lot in the article, is the fact that, you know, if we have these anti-oppressive values, like they said, I said at the beginning in that quote, like, our conscience and our training is saying, I'm not invested in maintaining power. Like, that's not what I'm here for, you know? Like, I'm sure these women didn't get into teaching for a power trip, you know? And like, I, you know, in anything that I do in my life, it is not for the power trip. And so we find ourselves in these positions of power, these positions of authority, and we think, okay, well, how can I try to cede power somewhat? Mm. How can I even the playing field, right? This is something I think about a lot as a therapist. Exactly. Yeah. Like, how do I even the playing field a bit? Because we're trying to build something different. We're trying to build like a more equitable environment.
Yep.
But we still live in the world that we live in. And so then when people feel challenged in any way, whether that's challenged because we're presenting anti-oppressive ideas that, you know, challenges the status quo, you know, of their lives or in society, or they feel challenged because, you know, it's like you got a C and that's not, you know, good for your GPA or whatever it is that you're, or your ego or whatever it is that, you know, that is a threat to for you. What are they going to go to, right? And again, like, if we're a woman of color, it's like, okay, that actually then puts us in a lot of danger, not only of like them trying to go above our heads or trying to somehow like ruin us, also just in the moment, suddenly their attacks on us make this environment very much like the broader society. And who is that helping? It's not, certainly not liberating me. It's not helping any other people of color in the room either. I don't think it's helping the white person either, to be honest.
Yeah, dude. And I think, like, you, I mean, you said it yourself, like, systems of power, systems of oppression still exist. And that's kind of what I meant when I said, like, the titles don't really, for some people, the titles are not, they're nonplussed. It's not, it doesn't make a difference either way. It's the fact that an institution is given, in that case, like you being the TA, some power. And if somebody has in their mind that they, as a, you know, as a cishet white man or as a white woman or as, you know, somebody that embodies power in their like, you know, beyond the classroom, that for you to have power in that space, it calls into question who people are when you have such vested interest in maintaining that power in your day-to-day life, right? Like, it completely discombobulates you. It reminds me of Toni Morrison when she was like, you know, if you can only be tall when somebody else is on their knees, like, what does that say about you? And it's like, you know, in instances where somebody is trying to humble you or trying to make a fool of you or trying to display that you don't know what you're talking about, it's like this show of, I don't want to accept you having any authority or power over me in any way, shape, or form. And I'm going to lash out in ways that humiliate you, you know, because I don't actually care. I don't have a vested interest in your humanity. I have a vested interest in protecting my power. And right now you're threatening it.
Absolutely.
How does this make you feel? Like, how, like, recalling these stories, I mean, to me, it presses me. You know, it's weird because you had just said, you know, a lot of the times as, you know, black women professors or women of color professors, it's like, I'm sure that a lot of those folks are not going into the space of being a professor or, you know, ascending in like the kind of the ivory tower to have like, quote unquote, power over their white students. But like, sometimes when people are trying to make a fool out of you, you want to double down and be like, do you know who I am? Like, you need to respect me. And I think the reality of it is that you actually can't force people to respect you or see you in that way. And that is so asinine. Like, it makes you feel like, what's the fucking point? Like, it doesn't matter what I do or how much effort I put into building my career or amassing knowledge or becoming an expert in my field. There's always going to be people who see me in a type of way that I can't really escape. So it's like, what are we left with, you know?
Yeah. And I think that is something that I'm really struggling with right now, because, you know, when I was younger, like I said, in that example, it really played on my imposter syndrome. Yeah. And it just, I carried so much shame forever. And that was sort of what I took away from it, was like this internalized idea of who I was. But now, like, now I'm more established in my career, and there's a lot of people in the world who know a lot more than me, but there's also a lot that I have to offer and that I can give to people who are less experienced in certain arenas than I am, right? Because yeah. I'm, you know, a little bit into my career now, somewhat established. I've done some things that I can, like, share knowledge about.
She's done some things, and- y'all. Yes. Respect. Yeah.
And I think that's what's really frustrating, is that when it happens now, it's like, oh, it really doesn't matter. It was never about me not knowing enough, you know? And like, there's so much, that was one example. Like, there's so much shame that I'm carrying from all of the times that I was treated that way before I knew, you know, that it wasn't because of me.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about you, right? If it wasn't you, it would be somebody else that person would exact that sort of undermining. For me, I feel like I think I am really frustrated hearing about stories where that sort of thing takes place, because I, you know, as a Black woman myself, I'm kind of like, I, like you, have come to this place in my life now where I'm beginning to feel more confident in my voice and what I have to offer, in the skills that I have built, amassed, and have worked on, so that, like, I feel like, oh, I have something. There's something there. It's not everything. It's not, it's not, you know, perfect. It's never gonna be. But I'm like, I will be fucking damned if somebody makes it seem as though I have nothing to offer. And that's kind of what I was saying. It's like, sometimes when people treat you in ways that undermine your authority or your power, it makes you want to lash out and, like, demand that people respect you. In the case of that doctor that I was mentioning, like, that story where she was like, call me Dr. So-and-so, like, that's my fucking name. I mean, I'm interested in continuing to witness those of us who have been sort of sidelined and marginalized and quieted and always assumed to not know, always assumed to be the person who, you know, has less skill than you do, to step into that power and actually also just, like, name the things. Because I think that we're oftentimes socialized, once you get into those, you know, if you're a professor, you're socialized to, like, not speak about the disrespect you have experienced along that journey. And I think that it's so important for us to be, like, naming what it is and how it actually plays out, because it's not always the cishet white man who's undermining you. Sometimes it's people who just, like, look just like you, who also have a vested interest in either usurping power from you, or they see you as a threat. Like, they kind of are in that sort of, like, crabs in a barrel, crabs in a bucket mentality, where it's like, there can only be one of us. And therefore, because I see you as my competition, I'm going to find ways to undermine your authority. And I'm like, no, like, I just, and not to say that this isn't, like, specifically about race, but, like, racialized people also have an awareness of the ways we have our own codified forms of, like, power over, like, the low key ways that we relate to one another. And in some cases don't stick up for each other when things like that are taking place. Like, a lot of the times I've always can count on, like, other Black women to have my back, and racialized women more broadly. But, like, sometimes it's like your own people who are, like, also kind of throwing you to the wolves and, like, making you have to go jump through hoops to prove that you actually are about your shit. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, it can be. And I think that is part of why we often internalize things as much as we do. If it was like so clearly, you know, white men treat me this way, but like women of color don't, it might be a little bit easier to see through, but it's so much messier. And so it can be really easy to internalize. And speaking of naming things, I wanted to read an excerpt from a thread that Sharonda J. Brown did on social media about imposter syndrome.
Give it to us.
Sharonda said, "Do I feel like an imposter, or do my body and brain just recognize that there are entire systems designed to keep me out of the spaces I deserve to be in? And the gatekeepers of these spaces are often loyal to those systems. For me, imposter syndrome often feels like a way to place the onus of our reality on individuals by focusing on how we respond to or fail to cope with systems rather than placing the onus on the systems themselves. It seems like what we really need is to interrogate and name how oppressive systems impact us and how they often convince us to internalize the way others treat us rather than identifying the pattern and calling a thing a thing." Mm. My sister actually said something very similar when I was talking to her on the phone a little while ago, because she's, you know, she has a very high powered career. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned something about imposter syndrome, and she was like, "I kind of hate when people talk about imposter syndrome, because really? It ignores the very real way that people treat you differently. And that's why you feel like you don't belong. Ooh, is because people don't respect you."
Yeah.
And so you start to internalize that.
I really appreciate that, because the onus is always on like the individual as opposed to the systems. In every form of systemic harm and violence that takes place, it's like, no. Like, okay, racism would be solved if you were just a respectable black person. Okay, we're going to be a respectable black person. It's like, how about we talk about the system of racism as opposed to trying to manipulate black bodies into being respectable black bodies? Like, that's the thing. And so I've never really thought about how imposter syndrome is like individualized as opposed to a symptom of how people obviously treat you as a little bit less knowledgeable or a lot less knowledgeable or are surprised. I've had this before. I've had this where I've been on a bus, run into a man that I know, a brother who is has like a PhD, and we had met through an academic internship that we did together. And I was in my undergrad and he was in his post grad. And we were talking about stuff, and we had like, people were looking at it because two niggas talking to each other on a bus. Of course, people don't look at that shit. And the looks that we got when we were talking about research, and it was like people were fascinated that two black people could be so articulate. And I think it's part of that, right? Like, part of the imposter syndrome, with air quotes around it, is that people can't believe that you would have the wherewithal, the gumption, the ability to transcend their ideas of you. And when you don't fit the ideas of other people, now they're just grasping at straws, trying to find ways to tear you down, to bring you to the level that they see you at, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that like there are certain jobs that are at different, like, you know, that are like leveled differently, and like having this job makes you a better person. But like, some people really just be looking at black women as like, all you can really be is the housekeeper or the house cleaner, or the, you know, that is the people's mentality. That is their first initial response in that case of the, you know, the white student who grabbed a lady with a briefcase and said, "We have a mess in here." It's like, I really want to thank you for that quote, because I so oftentimes internalize specifically imposter syndrome as like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I be more confident? As opposed to like, what's the evidence that I have in life that people who look like me are revered as experts in their field, are seen in a way that would lend me to believe that I too can be that, can feel confident. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so much bigger than just us.
Totally. And this is why I say this all the time to clients, like, because so often it's like, as women and non-binary people of color, we are going into these situations feeling less than and feeling like I don't deserve to be here. And then, you know, maybe even beating ourselves up more, being like, well, why can't I just be more confident? And it's like, so it's so disproportionately cishet men who walk into any space and they're totally underqualified, and they're just like, "You're welcome, everyone. Here I am."
Thank
like,
you for my and presence, you know,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so it's not, you know, just imposter syndrome does make it just sound like, oh, it's just this thing that like some people have, you know, syndrome, right? Syndromes imply that we don't know what causes them, or it's just this thing that pops up and it's like, no, that's not what's happening at all. Which is why now I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm sort of questioning everything, because again, earlier in my life, I did internalize these things, and now I actually have enough of a groundedness in my own competence and my own authority that when I'm being met with flagrant disrespect from people who I'm supposedly in positions of power over, it really does make me rethink a lot of, obviously not anti-oppression itself, but I mean, in the article they talked about, okay, let's talk about feminist pedagogy.
Let's go there.
What you all listening don't know is that earlier I said it and was like, absolutely not, I'm going to cut that out, and stopped. But
we'll go there for a minute. But yeah, like, we can,
we'll
talk
go there
a
for
bit
a second. In the article, they were talking about feminist pedagogy and, you know, the sort of ideas and values they were holding of leveling the playing field in the classroom and creating a safety for students to be able to speak their truth, come to voice, all of these things. But then they were saying, you know, yeah, we do value this framework, but as women of color, we're constantly in this caretaking role, and white people are the ones being cared for. And so again, when we're ceding power in this way in the classroom, we didn't have enough of it to begin with. And now what ends up happening is white students are wanting to be coddled, are feeling so entitled to that kind of labor, and we aren't given enough respect and authority to be able to trust that they won't push those boundaries too far. Right. So, you know, it makes me think like, oh, I walk into these situations, and I don't even think as much as a therapist, although occasionally it has come up in that context, but more often in community work and other settings that I'm in, I so often walk in with this like, okay, I'm in a position of power and authority here, so I want to try to make everybody comfortable and try to even the playing field. And it's like, actually, I think I need to claim authority differently. You know, like, it makes me really understand why Lauryn Hill insists that people call her Ms. Hill.
Yeah. The thing is, the expectation oftentimes when people see, let's say, a racialized professor is that they're going to find ways to, like you said, they're going to have inherently a lot of the time a deeper analysis about power, because we are treated in disempowered ways, like in our professional lives and in our regular lives. But like, still the onus shifts from the institution or from their white counterparts, you know, white professors, from thinking about how can they do that as opposed to thinking, okay, well, it's just, you know, racialized stuff. I was thinking about, as you were talking, the fact that we're all just supposed to be so grateful of being in the room. And when you were saying that, like, no, maybe I'm going to claim my authority in a different way, I love that, because I'm now beginning to be in spaces where people are asking me to, like, be part of things, like govern stuff, like lend my voice, lend my expertise to people. Are coming to me by virtue of my consulting business, but also just in community. I think people are like, oh, Nick, like, I need your expertise on something, or your feedback. There has to be a claiming of authority. And I think it can look however we all individually want it to look. But I, like you, really don't like the idea of becoming, again, the caretaker, the holder of people's emotions when it comes to my analysis of power. I'll name things, but I will also have a firm sense of, I wrote this down, boundaries. Because I think a lot of the times having an embodied authority that emanates beyond a position that you have is about having a strong sense of self and boundaries. You will not cross me in this way. And actually, in reality, I know that you think that I should be grateful to just be in this position, but if you don't respect my presence here, you won't have access to me. Like, that's the thing about, for me anyways. And I think Rihanna said that, like, what's the, you know, what do you do after a breakup? And she's like, I see it as like, if you don't want to be with me, like, you don't have access to my presence anymore. And I'm like, that's the thing, because I really believe this, that our presence in and of itself is a gift and shifts our environments, right? In the same way that when we talk about like when whiteness enters the room, it's like, well, I want to live in a type of way where when I enter the room, people know what's not going to happen. People know that like I will not stand for a whole host of fuck shit. But whether it comes to, you know, how they will treat me or how they will talk about people and communities that I care for. So I really like want to say thank you for saying that whole like, I refuse to coddle, because I think the expectation is that. And when you don't, people are like kicking and screaming. They don't know how to act at all. It's like toddler shit.
Totally. And so I think that is huge, because I think it is actually scary to be in a position of power and authority, especially, you know, when you're somebody who is treated like an imposter, and especially when you're somebody who's often harmed by those systems of power, right? You don't want to be the person harming. And so I think it can be very tempting to want everybody to be okay with you, you know, yeah, to like be ceding that power to make sure that this person doesn't feel nervous or intimidated or
that you're threatening.
Exactly. And so I'm trying to think, okay, well, how do I reconcile the fact that I need to claim my authority or I will be disrespected, and I refuse to cede my power and authority to someone just because they are not able to respect me and like the role that I have earned. It makes me think of in our last episode when you were talking about being accountable to values. Yep. So it's like, I don't actually have to measure whether I am being responsible enough in my position of power by what, you know, somebody my students is, or yeah, how they respond to me. And actually, I can't judge it that way. Obviously, I need to be tuned in and I need, yes, to be like paying attention to what's happening in the room. But I cannot judge whether I'm being responsible by the reactions of others, because so often they are reacting to a woman of color being in a position of authority over say them.
It. Yes, I love that.
We need to be able to like look at our values and look at our work and be like, am I in line or am I not? And be able to trust ourselves.
I think it's that. I think you're totally right about it. It has to be you're able to trust ourselves and, of course, hold on to the relational things of like, have I caused harm? Okay, let me fucking find ways to make sure that I don't cause harm. But yeah, like I just really, I feel like people's projections, I can't trust people's projections or ideas of me. Like, I don't trust that shit, especially if you don't know me. Like, I want to believe that people in my life who love me and that I have chosen to be part of my life in this, like, you know, intimate way we're doing life together would have checked me by now if I was doing some real fucking sideways shit.
We always talk about this. I was like, we always still have to have our trusted people that we can go to for feedback.
Yes.
And we have to be like, you know, going to therapy or doing whatever else that we do. I mean, I think this is where it gets so messy, because like I've definitely seen people who are causing harm sort of taking that position that like I'm not actually causing harm. People are just disrespecting me because I'm a woman. And, you know, continuing in that kind of thing. But I mean, ultimately, I guess that's why it's scary to be in a position of power or authority, is because like, ultimately, we have to be able to trust ourselves and trust what we've set up around us, you know, as our checks. Because again, like, if we just trust the people that are so often threatened by our power, we are always going to be in this spiral of like shame and
feeling like we're incompetent and yeah. Yeah.
Giving up like what we should truly be doing, you know, what we really do have to offer. So I want to close by reading another excerpt from this amazing article that made me feel so seen. Sorry.
On brand.
On brand. And again, they're talking specifically about academia, but it relates so much to me in my field. And I think we can all adapt it to our own careers and our own lives. So they say, when students perceive us as having less authority and power than they do, to what extent should we share power with them? What purpose does sharing power serve when students are privileged by the social structures and hence have more power than women of color professors? if the instructors share power to resist the existing power structures, should women of color instructors work first to establish authority? Instead of sharing our limited power and authority, we believe it is essential to first claim our power and authority in the class. It is never easy to purposefully claim authority in classrooms, particularly when our students see us as academic imposters or feel threatened by our position. And then they go through some things that they choose to do, like having students address them as doctor instead of their first names, not using facilitation as their only strategy, which is seen as a more equitable approach, but they often do use methods such as lecturing. They will monitor discussions and they will censure class members who monopolize discussions. And they said these actions, although completely contradicted by our gender socialization and training in women's studies and adult education, are formed by our unique reality as women of color faculty. Taking the active role of authority could be educational and inspirational for students who rarely see women of color assume the roles of experts or leaders in public arenas. The ultimate goal of claiming our authority is to use it to address the racism, sexism, and other forms of oppression that permeate the classroom.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.